member of the Society for American Baseball. I'm a member of the Society for American Baseball Research. Today is December the 12th, and I'm in the home of Cecil Perkins in Martinsburg, West Virginia. We'll be sending a copy of the tape to the Hall of Fame, but Sabre reserves the right to distribute the tape or transcripts of the interview to other researchers and post it on the internet. Is that okay with you?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. How old are you?
61, December 30.
And where were you born?
I was born in Baltimore. Baltimore.
Did you grow up there?
Yes, I grew up in a small town right outside of Baltimore called Ellicott City.
I don't live too far from there. what did your dad do?
My dad worked for the Baltimore Transit Authority in Baltimore. He did repair work on the streetcars and buses and things like that. He worked in the union shops down in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. Any brothers or sisters?
I have one sister.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get interested in baseball?
I started when I was 12 years old. I was on the initial group of teams, which were, I think there were four in the Ellicott City Little League. And that's kind of how I started. And I had a really, really tremendous year that first year. I played Little League baseball and just kind of a natural. And it just, everything just came to me naturally and did very well. And that's how it all started, 1953.
How did the team do?
We were 17-1. We played.
Because you moved up into.
Yeah, next year, when I became 13 years old, because the league started when I was 12, so I only had the opportunity to play that 1 year. And then the next year I moved up to Pony League and played over in Baltimore County, and I played in the Pony Leagues there for 2 years. And then I moved on up to high school and then on to college.
Okay, and what position did you play in high school?
I pitched and played first base.
Okay, you're right-hander or left?
Right-hander.
Okay, and how'd the high school team do?
We did real well. We were a big school. I went to Howard High, which is very close.
I played tennis around.
Right. It's very close to Ellicott City and not far from where you live in Columbia. And I guess to make it as short as possible, our team was made up of just a few athletes that played everything. I mean, I thought it was a very good basketball player. I ran track. And even though it was a big school, it seemed like it was just a few guys that were really interested in playing sports at that time. And so out of football, basketball, and baseball, and track, the major sports we played there was tennis and golf and those things. In those days, just wasn't a popular sport. We had those 8 or 10 or 12 people, and we did everything. And so we were kind of shorthanded. We had, I did very well and always did well in all the sports I ever played. But our team did okay. We won a lot more games than we lost, of course. But we needed a couple more pitchers, which we didn't have. After me and it was another gentleman by the name of Donald Winstead. After us, there was just nobody else. And so it got a little touchy when we had to play 2 or 3 games in a row or something like that. We were shorthanded.
Did you ever get a sore arm?
Oh yes. I pitched, especially I guess when I was 18. Started playing in the Baltimore and in the city leagues and so forth with Home Laundry and Leonis and those guys. And once I got in there, of course, the demand to pitch was greater. I had to pitch more. And so consequently, I did develop some shoulder problems when I was 18. And I remember distinctly my mom taking me in to see an old chiropractor in Irvington and treated me with the diathermy machine where they clamped it on your shoulder and treated me with heat and so forth.
It helps them?
It helped. But over the years, I've actually had 3 operations on my arm, and that's the reason why I was not as successful in baseball as I should have been because of the arm injuries that I had.
I've heard that for years, unfortunately.
Right.
Now, around that time, I guess the Orioles, the team, the Browns moved to Baltimore, right? I guess
they were
around that time.
Yeah, they were there. I think they came in 54.
54, right. Uh-huh.
And that was, they had Turley and Clint Courtney was a catcher, and Jim Busby was in playing center field, and those guys. And I went over there and pitched to Batty Bucks a few times at Memorial Stadium.
Okay.
And I also went to Washington, D.C. The pitch for the old center, that was the Ramos and Pasquale, and those guys were over there.
Well, how was that arranged? I mean,
well, what happened was is that I didn't, like I said, I was extremely good. I was told many, many times, and not to brag about it, but I was told at that time I was by far the best pitcher in the state of Maryland and in the Baltimore area. So consequently,
and how old were you about that time?
I was 18.
Okay.
Yeah, and so what happened was is that I would go pretty much. I mean, I played for Home Laundry, which was a pretty good-sized outfit, and we played like 56 or 58 games in the summer. So we played a lot of baseball. We played up in Pennsylvania and Altoona and the national tournaments and stuff like that, and we played in the Naval Academy and the Plebes and all down the Naval Academy. And so we got around and played a lot of baseball. And so,
about how you got over to... pitching batting practice
okay.
for the center.
So what happened was is that the Orioles and the Yankees and other organizations became interested in, you know, signing me at that time. And so they just kind of invited me to come by and, you know, meet the players. And, you know, it's kind of like the same as you go to visit colleges today, you know. It was giving me a chance to see what it was like to, you know, be in that atmosphere. And so, you know, I threw a couple batting practice balls when I went and pitched a batting practice and threw. I think I threw twice in Washington, two or three times in Baltimore. And where I really got to be known in Baltimore, when I was really basically, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, was when I was 16. If you recall back in those days, they had the Hearst All-Stars. And the Hearst All-Stars was from the Hearst newspapers up in New York. And they would pick players all around the mid-Atlantic and the eastern part of the United States, and they would go to New York and play the Hearst All-Stars out of New York City. And so they would have a game at Memorial Stadium every year. And I started the game when I was 16 years old at the Memorial Stadium. And I never was invited to New York. But all 3 years there, it was like they would select whoever they needed to go there. Like if they needed an outfielder, they would take an outfielder. If they needed an infielder, they would take an infielder. And unfortunately, the 3 years that I was there, they never took a pitcher. So I, you know, whether that was good or bad, I don't know. But I had a lot of exposure, and back then, because Baltimore is a pretty good-sized community, and there was a lot of baseball being played in those days, and so there was a lot of people that knew about me around the area.
When you pitched batting practice for the centers, do you remember any of the players you pitched to?
No.
With Killebrew or Stever?
Those guys were there. This was in 59, so it's hard for me. All I remember distinctly about Old Griffith Stadium was it was just absolutely filthy dirty. I mean, when I walked into the clubhouse, I thought, my gracious. I mean, I had to step over clothes on the floor. I mean, it was just really a messy atmosphere. It wasn't very impressive at all. And so for a young kid to go into that and thinking, is this what you would you like to do to this ball club, and look at the conditions that they were under, that didn't impress me very, very much.
Had you seen any ball games at Griffith Stadium?
Yes, I did. I went over there a couple of times, in fact, I saw Ted Williams play there, and I saw Mantle play there, and I remember Williams hitting one gigantic blast over the wall out there and up into the trees, and that was at Old Griffith Stadium. They had a huge wall in the center. Right,
yeah, I remember. Yeah, was that possibly opening day?
Yeah, it was.
Because I remember it too. I think he hit the home run, but the center was 10-1.
Yeah,
I think it was. Only
yeah,
that was mammoth.
Yeah, that you had to hit the ball 450 plus to get it out of there. And back then, you know,
that was the first inning too.
Yeah, first or second. It was early
first
in the ball game.
Right, I think he
and,
batted third.
And I remember that shot, not because I had a really good scene. I could see it really well. But that old stadium. I really hope that they get baseball back in Washington, because I think it would go there now. I really do.
They recently, Saber was involved with Howard University, where the stadium
mm-hmm.
used to be.
Right.
They're putting up a plaque now, and they're
mm-hmm.
going to have a museum there.
Right.
Commemorating the stadium.
Right, right.
Players.
Right.
Okay. Now, in growing up, did you have any favorite team or player that you...
Well, actually, when I was growing up, I liked the Braves. I liked the Milwaukee Braves, if that's who they were then.
They had just moved.
Yes, and I liked, and I was always a Yankee fan. I remember, because when I was growing up in my baseball years, the Braves and the Yankees were always up there in the top, in the World Series. And I remember Spawn, you know, Burdette, Lou Burdette, and those guys, and Eddie Matthews, and Henry Aaron, and those guys. And then, of course, you had Mantle and those guys over in Whitey Ford and Bruce and Yogi and those guys playing with the Yankees. So I remember those were my two favorite teams.
What were the circumstances of your signing into organized baseball?
Well, what happened was a guy by the name of Joe Consoli, who was a scout for Pittsburgh Pirates, lived in Baltimore. And Joe was a really nice fellow. He just passed away about two or three. In fact, he gave me a Bible when I sent me a Bible and I got married. And really a nice fellow. And he lived in Baltimore, and he said, you got a great future in this game. He used to really, I mean, he would call me in the evenings every once in a while, and just touch base, ask me how I was doing, how I was playing and so forth. Well, anyway, I guess he was the guy that kind of steered me towards, because I was really considering not playing professionally, especially out of high school. I wanted to go to college because I had a lot of college scholarships offered to me, mainly to play basketball.
What were some of the schools?
Maryland. George Washington University, West Virginia, Duke, Western Maryland, Washington College down in Chestertown, a lot of schools that, in the area that, were in that, that I guess scouted this Mid-Atlantic area. Those schools that I mentioned were right there. They were within a few hours away. So, but anyway, I went on and I went to spring training with Pittsburgh.
So Pittsburgh, you signed with Pittsburgh?
No, I did not. I'm trying to tell you how I got to that decision. Well, anyway, I started to go to Maryland. Maryland offered me a scholarship, University of Maryland basketball and baseball scholarship. And I went over there and I walked around, looked at the school and all. My mentality when I got out of high school was that I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. So I didn't want to jump into going to school somewhere I wasn't really pleased with, even though Maryland was a big school and good reputation and all that, the coaching staff was good. But anyway, I decided not to go there. So I went to work and just spent the winter working. I worked in Montgomery Wards in Baltimore in the warehouse for that one winter.
That huge building. Still there, I guess.
I guess, but I don't know. It's hooked up. Of course, Wards is out of business now. But anyway, I worked there with a friend of mine, a guy by the name of Gene Siebold, who lived I didn't drive, I didn't have a car, and he did. And so whenever I needed to get to a ball game, he'd take it. So I ended up going to, I'm losing my train, there's so much in my head to tell you, it's hard for me to remember, which direction. But anyway, I went to spring training that next spring. The Pirates had contacted me, Joe had contacted me in the winter and said, what are you going to do? He didn't really push me, but he says, you need to make a decision. You don't want to waste this time. He says, because you're at the prime time of when you need to decide what you want to do. He says, you can't wait two or three years and then say, hey, I want to play baseball. He said, so what do you want to do? And I said, well, I don't know. I said, the Orioles tried to sign me. And I said, they really didn't offer me enough money. And I said, I'm really undecided. And he said, well, why don't you go down to spring training with us in our minor league camp in Jacksonville? And said, and we'll go ahead and see what we can do to get you what you want. So I don't know.
Was that a common thing? In other words, an unsigned player?
I don't know if it was common or not. All I know is they asked me to go, and they said, you go down there and see what you think, and then we'll decide from there. Whether you want to sign, how much we want to sign you for, or whatever. He said, we want to sign you. He said, it's a matter of if it fits. If it fits for you, it fits for us. So I went to the minor league training camp, and
where was that?
I said Jacksonville, and I think that's where it was. But it's been 1960, so it's hard for me to recall. But it was in Florida, and I recall that they just sent me a plane ticket and said, "Hey, catch a plane." Oh, and by the way, I did fly to Pittsburgh. I forgot to tell you, I flew up to Pittsburgh and threw batting practice for Branch Rickey.
I was going to ask you, he was still with the
organization. I there's so much in my head that it's hard for me to remember, but my dad and I did fly up to Pittsburgh, and I worked out at Ebbets Field, and, not Ebbets Field,
Forbes Field.
Forbes Field. Ebbets Field was the old Brooklyn.
Right.
Brooklyn, but Forbes Field was where I worked out, and,
Actually, the Pirates were to win the World Series that year.
Yes, that was in '60. Yeah, that's correct. And so I worked out there. And again, I just came home, and everybody just kind of, you know, it's just like today, they talk to you, and they call you and all, but I didn't make a decision then either. So anyway, I went to spring training with the Pirates, and I stayed down there for about 4 or 5 weeks and decided that wasn't, you know, they couldn't come up with what I wanted, and so I came back. So when I came back, my parents, especially my dad, he says, hey, you know, what are you going to do? You know, he says, you know, you're wasting a lot of time. Are you going to go? So I think I'm going to go to school. So I said, I won't be able to go back to Maryland because I turned them down. So I said, I'll have to choose somebody else. So in that interim, one of the guys that was down in Florida, his name was Ray Speaker, and he was a scout for the Pirates. And he lived up in a community called Salem, West Virginia, which is outside of Clarksburg. And Ray called me on the phone one day and said, hey, said, we understand, he said, we've checked you out. We understand you're a really good basketball player. I said, yeah. He said, we talked to some of the big schools. We talked to the coach over at GW, and of course we called Merrill, and he said, you could play anywhere. And he said, I talked to our coach at Salem College, Don Christie, and he said, he'd like for you to come up. So Gene Seabold, the gentleman I spoke with, as I told you earlier, drove me all around. We jumped in the car and drove 5 hours up Route 50 all the way up through the mountains of West Virginia to get to Salem College. And so I worked out for the basketball coach and Clem Fowler, who was the baseball coach. I didn't work out for him. I just put, as soon as I played basketball, the coach said, hey, we'll take you now. And I said, okay, it's fine. It's a small school. So and I went there and loved it. Did extremely well, and you know, and maybe all conference team, all tournament teams, and all that stuff in baseball and basketball.
What conference were
they? They're in the West Virginia Intercollegiate Conference with Shepherd, West Virginia
Division
Wesley.
Division two, or?
Well, at that time it was NAIA.
Oh yeah, NAIA.
Yeah, now it's Division three. I think it's Division three. But anyway, it was a small school, and I'm really glad I went there because I got. My grades were great, you know. I think if I'd went to a big school, and I wasn't the greatest student in the world, but I wasn't the worst either. But
might have been more demanding your time.
Yeah, and when you play at a really big school, the time factor, you know, you're away from classes a lot. Even though I was away a lot at Salem, it was just smaller. Classes were smaller. You could get into the classes and talk with the professors, and they could help you get a problem. And so I really liked it there, and I did extremely well. And of course, the Pirates were there because Ray was there. Ray Speaker lived right there in the community, and he helped with the baseball team, and he was a scout. And then all of a sudden, scouts started, you know, stopping by Cleveland, you know, New York, and you know, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore. You know, they all started watching me in college.
Right. Now, how old were you about this time?
I was 19. See, I'd set out that from 18, and so actually, that winter I became 20. So my first year in college, I was 19 going in, but December 1st I was 20 my freshman year. So, and that might have been a plus too, maturity-wise. You know, it gave me that little edge physically and also mentally. And so I'm really glad. And that's kind of how I got to that point. And then after my sophomore year, you know, It just clicked in my head, you know, I've done everything I can do at this school, you know, I've set all these records and done everything and led the nation in strikeouts, was like fourth in the nation in ERA, and, you know, and I was All-American in baseball, and I said, well, a little All-American in those days, and because of the size of the school, and so I just thought, now's the time. So Randy Gumpert was the regional scout for the Yankees at that time, and he called, and he got me to sign, and I went to Baltimore, and Johnny Newman was the scout out of the Baltimore area, and Johnny Newman was the one I actually came to my home in Ellicott City and, you know, signed with him.
He's the one that had the unassisted triple play.
Right, that's exactly right. And Johnny came to my house, and I signed, and 3 days later I was on a train to Harlan, Kentucky to play in the rookie league.
This was in 61?
62, yeah. And so I went to Holland, and believe it or not, which is just kind of right, my roommate there was Denny McClain.
Aha! Uh-huh.
And Denny and I became pretty good friends.
What kind of fellow was he then?
Denny was a soft drinking fool. I never seen anybody in my life. We roomed together, and he would buy 8 or 10 or 12 pots at a time and drink half of them at one sitting. I mean, he just loved soft drinks. And he just, I remember him distinctly just putting the bottles up in the windowsill. And I said, what are you going to say? I always kid him and say, you going to save this thing? Because you get a nickel back, you know. He said, yeah, well, I'll turn it back in and then I'll get enough to buy a couple more. But then the White Sox and the Yankees shared that team. So the Yankees supplied some players and the White Sox supplied some players. And Lamar North was the Yankee was the Yankee manager there, and I'm trying to think who the White Sox had there, and then we had a couple assistant coaches too. But I remember Denny started to open the season over in Tennessee against the Senators, and then I pitched the second game. Denny struck out 16 the first night, and the next night I struck out 17.
Well, I guess they figured I'd have a good team, good year.
But neither one of us stayed there. We were only there just a few weeks.
Yeah, you went to Idaho Falls.
Yeah.
Both of you went?
No, he went to Clinton, Iowa. Denny, you know, we pitched 2 or 3 ball games, and they said, "Hey, this league, you're way over, you know, you're way over this league." So I just jumped on a plane. They sent me to Idaho Falls, and then Denny went to Clinton, Iowa, and then we just kind of lost track of each other.
I guess Harlan was a Class D, probably.
Yeah, that was it was considered a rookie league. I don't even know if they, I guess if you classified it, it was D, but it was basically just first year players had never played before, and everybody there, as far as I know. And can remember, none of them had any professional experience. They were all new players. There were some college, there was quite a few college players like myself there, and but mostly the bulk of the players at that time were high school players.
Now, McLean was, so he was a Yankee one time, at least?
No, he was with the White Sox.
The White Sox.
And like I said, we shared. We had like 16 or 17 players, and they had about the same amount. And what happened was we just kind of rotated. The Yankees, we would play one game, the next day the White Sox would kind of play, but if they needed a right fielder or a left fielder, you know, that's the way it worked.
Yeah, when you went to Idaho Falls, I guess that was probably the furthest you ever been away from home.
Pretty much, but I loved Idaho Falls. It was climbing out there was great. Lauren Babe, who ended up being the third base coach for the Yankees for a while, he ended up being my manager again in the minors a couple times, but he was the manager out there in Idaho. And I went to Idaho Falls, and for some reason I had no control trouble in Harlem. When I got to Idaho Falls, I had a terrible time with my control. And so anyway, I thought sure the Phillies were going to draft me in the winter draft that year, because at that time, they could draft you, and you had to play in the big leagues the next year. That was when
you had to stay with the team.
Yeah, you had to stay with the team the next year. So the only way you could get protected would be to put on the 40-man roster. Well, they didn't put me on the 40-man roster, they put me in the AAA rosters, and the Phillies, instead of taking me, took a pitcher who was there named Rich Beck. And Richard Beck ended up going to the Phillies. It was between the two of us which one was born. And so they chose Rich Beck, and I stayed with the Yankees.
Why did you think it'd be the Phillies? Because they had the worst record of the first choice?
No, I don't know how that, it's just, they just, you know how they get the feelers. You know, they say, you know, they just say,
because they had scouted you.
Yeah, they have scouts in those leagues. And somebody walks over to you, you know, leans over the stands and says, hey, I'm so-and-so, and I don't even remember the gentleman's name, but we're pretty interested in drafting one of you two guys here. And, of course, Rich was a bigger guy now. Rich was about 6'3 or 4. And it ended
you're,
up...
You're about 6 foot.
6'1", something like that. And so they, at that time, back in those days, for some reason, it's not like it is today. Back then, they were... maybe still way, but they like big guys.
Yeah, they like big guys now.
Yeah,
that's
for
sure.
And they see a guy at 6 feet or 6 foot, they see a guy that's standing right beside him, 6'3" or 4'5". First thing in your mind, well, this bigger guy's going to last longer, going to hold up better physically, and that's not always true. But anyway, I think that really did play a part in it, because as far as ability, I still, all the way through the system, I was the hardest thrower and had the best stuff all the way through my career with the Yankees. And so it wasn't a question of whether I had the ability, it was just who they wanted.
Okay, so next year you're also with, you stay with Idaho Falls.
Yeah, the next year.
63.
Yeah, and that's when I hurt my arm.
Yeah, you're only in 2 games, I think,
yeah.
6 innings.
Yeah.
I guess that happened early in the year.
Yeah, it had started bothering me with my elbow. And I had a little problem with my elbow when I was in college. And I'd gone into Baltimore and talked to Dr. Brooks when I was in high school, and he looked at my arm and says, Well, he says, it looks like you might have a little bit of a bone spur in there, but he says, it's not something I think needs to be operated on. You know, this was, he says, it's not something that I would like to operate on a 17 or 18 year old kid. So he said, I just go ahead and, say, and keep on playing. He says, if it gets worse, then we'll address that. So I pitched the first year in the minors, and it didn't bother me. When I went out to Idaho the following year, in spring training, it really started to give me a problem. It started swelling, you know, after I'd throw two or three innings in exhibition games or something, it would get stiff and I couldn't really straighten it out and it'd have a little pop to it. And so I'd have to ice it down and all. So eventually, I went on, of course, I went on out to Idaho, and after just a couple games, it just started really hurting. It was cold out there early in the year, you know, because in Idaho in April, you can have snow and everything.
Where did they have spring training?
We had spring training that year in Lake Wales, Florida. And so, I went on out there, and I heard it. So they sent me they flew me to New York, to Lenox Hill, and Dr. Gaynor, Sidney Gaynor, that did all the operations on Mickey Mantle, his knees and all, he looked at it. He says, hey, he says, we got to fix that. He says, you got a bone floating around in there. He says, so if you ever had something, he says, it's broken off of the tip of the elbow and it's in there, he says, it'll never get any better. And there was another guy from Brooklyn named Lou Romanucci, and he was a pitcher. And so Lou...
He was there at the same time you were?
Yeah. Lou and I, Dr. Gaynor said, well, I've got another boy, just like you. He says, we're going to set the operation. So he says, this is when we're going to do it. And I said, okay. So Lou and I both went in, and he operated on Lou at 8 o'clock, and me about 45 minutes later, because it doesn't take very long to do that operation. And so we were in Lenox Hill Hospital, and while we were there, Cleet Boyer was there. And Cleet had an injury, knee or something like that, to play, third base for the Yankees. And so we slipped down there and see him. And then that's kind of how my arm problem started. So that year was just kind of like just a waste. And I'd go back up to New York, and they'd check my arm out, and then I flew back up a couple times, and Gaynor re-examined me, and then I wish I would have been like maybe 20 years later, because the therapy that's now available and the conditioning programs and all these guys have now, it's just like night and day. Back then, it was just go home and, you know, rest up, and there was no assigned or designed type of program to rehabilitate me or anything.
And so that, high tech is now.
Oh, it's just amazing what these guys don't know how good they've got it. And not only that, the surgeries I've had on my shoulder, today, they can do the same thing. And I was out for the whole year. I mean, now these guys, 6, 8, 10 weeks later, they're pitching again, you know? And because it's not so invasive as it is today. Back then, when they cut you, they cut you. And it was very traumatic to you, you know, to whatever part of the body was that they worked on.
When you signed with the Yankees, did you get a signing bonus?
Yes. Yes,
I remember how much it was.
Yeah, it was $10,000, and then a progressive bonus of $17,500 on top of that. So that's what I was. And then I'm trying to remember. I believe they paid. See, I ended up graduating college at Shepherd College, which is not very far from here, and so. It seems to me that they did pay my tuition for the next to finish my junior and senior years.
When you did the off-season?
Yeah, that's what I got. Yeah, it took me a long time to finish that.
Now, in 1964, you went to start out with Shelby, Western Carolina.
Well, I actually started out with Greensboro.
Oh, okay. They have Greensboro down there, but I guess so. Okay.
Yeah, and Lamar North was, or not Lamar North, Lauren Babe was my manager there. Remember I told you?
He was in Idaho.
Well, he had gotten moved up, because Greensboro was in the Carolina League, which was a pretty good league at that time. And so I went there, and I had, there again, I was just coming off an arm injury, and my control was just horrendous. I really, really had some problems with my control.
37 walks and 33 innings.
Yeah, I just couldn't find a plate. And so they said, well, what you need to do, we're going to send you to Shelby, which is a little lower league, and you can go down there if you have a problem or anything. You know, it won't be as difficult for you to work through it as it is playing at a higher, you know, the higher level. It's just like they do today. They got a guy that's not, you know, a big league player. They won't even send him to Triple A. They'll send him all the way to Double A, or maybe even lower, just so he can play and not be worried about what he does or how he does. And so, and that's basically what they did with me. And then I went down there, and Gary Blaylock, who was pitching coach with Kansas City, when Dick Houserman was there, he was my manager. And we got along pretty well. And Fritz Peterson, remember the Yankee?
Yeah.
The gentleman that had the problem with the wives in New York?
Switch the wives.
Switch, yeah. Okay. Mike Kekich, wasn't it?
I forgot, but yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he was there, Fritz and I, and so I did real well there. I mean, my pitching, I mean, my arm, I had a little arm problem. I started getting a little shoulder problem and all because I was kind of leery, and it leered my elbow, and I was just trying to protect it, and then my shoulder started bothering me a little bit. But I struck out a lot of batters. I think I had a couple of games where I struck out 18.
131 batters. I struck out 131 batters in 91 innings.
Yeah. Well, so that's about like one. I was averaging double figures every ball game. You know.
And your ERA was just a little over 3.07.
Yeah, right.
Were you a starting pitcher, basically?
Yeah, I never relieved once in the minor leagues, and that I can recall. I don't remember. No, I don't remember ever relieving one time. But I did relieve one time in the big leagues, and that was in Baltimore. Yeah. I started. Obviously, that's all I ever did was start.
Then the next year, you were with Greensboro.
Yeah, the next year I went back to Greensboro, and that's when I got to play with Bobby Mercer and those guys. We were all there. We had a nice ball club there.
Yeah, 131 innings that year.
Yeah, right. And anyway, when I was at Shelby, going back to Shelby, yeah. Fritz Peterson and I, we got invited to the instructional league. Fritz Peterson and myself were the only two out for that team.
Was that in the winter?
Yeah, that was in winter. It was in Fort Lauderdale where the Yankees trained. And we went down there, and Steve Suchak, and I'm trying to think who a couple of the other, Mike Hegan's dad.
Sure.
Well, Mike was there, and myself, and Mike Ferraro, who ended up being a manager of Cleveland, or coach of Cleveland, he was there. And quite a few good players were in that instructional league with us. They ended up being, you know, big league ball players. And Robinson, he ended up playing right field for Pittsburgh, and also, you know, he was there. And Fritz Peterson, like I said, and I'm trying to think if there's anybody else there. That ended up being, there was probably six out of that first year instructionally ended up being respectable, good big baseball players. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you finished up, I guess, with Columbus in the Southern League.
Okay, now that was,
that was Columbus, Georgia.
What happened was, is how I got to Greensboro that year. Lauren Babe was at Columbus. Lauren Babe, I went to Columbus, and again, I had that control problem, and Lauren wasn't real hepped on that. You know, he said, you can throw the ball through a brick wall, but he said, you can't throw strikes. So they sent me back to Greensboro. That was where that was the one year that you see there. I think it was 9-7 or something like that.
9-7, yeah.
Yeah. Then the next year, I went to Columbus, which was double A. That was in the South.
Okay. Columbus, Georgia, I guess.
Columbus, Georgia, that's correct. That's where I ended up there. I'm trying to think who. Jack Reed, center fielder for the Yankees. He was the manager there.
And you pitched 142 innings.
Yeah, and that was a great league. I had some really good ball games. That was the year. That was the league that the Oakland team that won all the World Series in. Bando, Monday, Rene Latchman, Catfish Hunter, all those guys played on that team at Birmingham. And I remember distinctly pitching a three-hit shutout against those guys, struck out 11 in Columbus at one day. And one night, it was a big night there, and we had about 10,000 fans. And it was that was kind of like, I don't know,
Game of the year?
Well, not so much the game of the year. It was like Reed just came out. It kind of makes me feel kind of teary-eyed because he said, you can pitch anywhere. You know?
Okay, then. That was then next year you went up to the big leagues.
Well, no, the next year?
67.
67, I ended up in the league, but I started in 67. I went to AAA.
Syracuse.
And the two guys on that team were Stan Bonson. I don't know if you remember Stan or not. Stan played like 18 years at the big leagues. Well, Stan and I were on the same team that year. And I remember the Yankees came into Syracuse to play us next Michigan. We have a big league team, we'll play the triple A teams, and then I pitched that game against them, and I pitched like three or four innings, and I struck out like seven or eight guys in three or four innings against the Yankees.
And so, very timely.
Yeah. And so just a few weeks later, I was in Buffalo, and Gary Blaylock was, again, was my manager, the one that was originally in Shelby. He called me on the phone in the hotel and said, hey, Ralph Houck wants you in Minnesota tomorrow, so you have to catch a plane tomorrow.
Now, about what time of the year? I guess it's late in the year?
This is in July.
In July?
Yeah. Okay. It was July, the, it was actually, I was going to pitch with Jim Bouton. Jim Bouton and I were going to pitch a 4th of July doubleheader at Buffalo Stadium against Buffalo the next day. And so they just said, you know, you're gone. So, okay. They had just sent Jim Bouton down.
Okay. Describe your first day in the big leagues.
Well, to be perfectly honest, everything was kind of hectic. You know, the time I got there, it was real late at night. The next day, time I made the flights and all, because we were in Buffalo, and I had to fly. I forget, I had to make two or three different flights in order to get to Minneapolis. And I remember getting in fairly late at night and got to the hotel. And so the next day, of course, we had to play the Twins over there. What was it called? It was the outdoor stadium, not the Metrodome.
It was in Bloomington.
Yes, it was the outdoor stadium. It was not the Metrodome as it is today. And so all I remember is I was just really tired because when they told me it was late at night, we just got back from a late game. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and he called me and said, hey, got a telegram here, you got to go. So I was pretty tired. And so the only thing I remember is just sitting in the dugout and just seeing my name flash up on the board that I was going to pitch against Jim Catt the next night. That's, you know, and it, you know, I really wasn't nervous or anything, to be perfectly honest. The only thing that I struggled with the first game that I ever pitched in the big leagues was I didn't have the combination that I needed. And when I say combination, Jake Gibbs was catching that, and Russell Harrod was injured or whatever. Jake was catching.
Gibbs was an All-American quarterback. Wasn't
yeah, Ole Miss. And he was catching, and for some reason, we didn't communicate very well. And he was kind of the kind of guy that was, I don't know, just difficult for me to have that communication skill with that you need to have. Because I had pitched to certain guys through the minor leagues, and they kind of followed me. And when here I am, I get into the big leagues, and here's Gibbs. I've never thrown to Gibbs in my life, and so and he didn't know what to call. And I'm in the big leagues. I'm reluctant to shake pitches off because I'm a rookie. Who am I to tell? You know, I don't want to throw this. You know, my first. So it really, that bothered me a lot.
Was Gibbs the first grade catcher?
Well, he wasn't at that time because I believe Ellie was injured and wasn't playing very much. But Jake was catching pretty good much all the time at that time. And that was the reason, that was my big reason. I didn't have somebody there to help me. You know, you just can't go up there and just throw. You know, you got to have some kind of an idea. Even though I could throw really, really hard and everything, had great stuff, you just, you know, in a ball game like that, you just got to take and have some help. And I didn't have it.
Okay, so you did pitch against Cotton next day?
Yeah, the next night we pitched against him.
Okay, and what happened?
Well, I was a little wild. Not so much nervous as I was just a little wild. And so, I gave up a couple, you know, out there at Minneapolis, it doesn't take much to hit a home run. I gave up a home run to somebody, 3-1 homer. I forget, it was first baseman. I can't even remember who it was.
Is it Mincher?
No. I remember that Allison, no, Aliva, I didn't have any problems with him. Was that Allison? Allison's the guy that, there again, I got behind on the hitters, you know, and had to throw pitches I didn't really want to throw, and the location wasn't good, and so I had a really, not a very good outing at all up there. I think I gave up like eight runs in three or four innings or something like that. So.
No, I only gave up five runs.
Five runs?
I mean, five runs, you were in two games.
Right.
Five runs were.
So I must have gave up five runs in three or four innings when I pitched out there. And then I ended up pitching again in Baltimore a few days later, and I came in relief in Baltimore and pitched a couple of shutout innings. And then it was kind of like a prelude because a few days later, I was to pitch the Mariners Trophy game against the Mets. And I pitched that game against the Mets in Yankee Stadium when they used to have the old Mariners Trophy game. They haven't done that for years. Oh, okay. And that was the charity game. And it was like, I guess there's probably 40,000 people in Yankee Stadium. But they drew really well. And yeah, the Mets fans.
Yeah, a lot of, inter-city competition.
Yeah. Right.
Right there. Now, Houck was the manager. Of course, first, the Yankees, that was really an off year. They finished ninth that year.
Yeah, we had a really poor ball club.
Their down year, of their down years. Yeah. What do you think about Houck, or how did he strike you?
Houck was a real stern guy.
Called him major, didn't he?
You didn't mess with him. You know, he ruled, kind of ruled with a stern hand, but he was fair. I mean, I never known him not to be fair, but he was pretty tough. He wasn't the kind of guy you could walk in and slap on the back and say, "Hey, Ralph, how you doing?" You know, just don't, you know, just, you know, he kind of kept the distance and knew what to expect from him and at all times. But no, Ralph was fine. My problem was that it was an inopportune time for me too, because they were in the process and had been, unbeknownst to me, they were trying to get Steve Barber. And Steve Barber from the Orioles, well, he was in Seattle. He had been having some arm problems, and they'd sent him to Seattle, and him and Roy White were both out there. And anyway, they ended up getting Steve from them. Of course, he was a 20-game winner, and they got Roy White in, and so they overloaded the roster. So they said to me, they said, "We're going to go ahead and put you on the 40-man roster and leave you on there to protect you." And they said, "And we'll just see what happens next spring." So what happened was I was up there for like 3 weeks or so, and they sent me back down to AAA to
Syracuse.
Right.
Now, when you were with the Yankees, you were there for about 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Did you get to play teams like Boston?
We played the Orioles and we played Minnesota, and I'm trying to think. Chicago. I'm trying to think who we played that time. I can't remember.
So with the Orioles, there were Frank and Brooks Robinson.
Yeah, Brooks was playing. Yeah. Frank was playing. Yeah.
They had won the World Series the previous year.
Yeah. They had a nice ball club. Yeah.
Any other players that?
The thing was that year after I went there. The Yankees called and said, "Hey, we want you to go to Puerto Rico." Well, I played in the winter in the instruction room a couple times. So this year they said, "We want you to go to Puerto Rico and play." So, and that was the time in '67, right towards the end of the year in '67, my right shoulder began to bother me. This was after I came back from the Yankees. I still had a couple months in the season to go, and we were, you know, Bonds and I, and I was really pressing. I was trying to lead the International League in ERA, and you know, I had some goals I wanted to try to, you know, accomplish. And so I was really, really working hard. And there was a lot of good pitchers in there, you know, Tug McGraw and Reed, and I think Seager was there. I think Nolan Ryan was in that league that year. And there was a lot of good pitchers. And I was like third or fourth in the league in ERA. So I was really punching hard to get it. And I forget who, I'm not sure whether Reed or the Atlanta relief pitcher that ended up relieving all those years. One of those two guys ended up winning the ERA title. So, but anyway, the Yankees called me and said, "Hey, we want you to go to Puerto Rico and we want you to play down for Louis Arroyo in Ponce." So I said, "Okay." And in my back of my head, I'm thinking, I probably shouldn't go because, you know, my shoulder was bothering me something. It probably would have been better if I had just rested that winter, you know. But it was, you know, how many guys get to go down there? Because at that time, it was like playing in an all-star game. I mean, I pitched the opening game at San Juan. And, I mean, we're talking Juan Pizarro, Tony Perez, Tony Gonzalez, Lee May. I mean, you're talking about, you know, guys that, you know, best players in the game, you know, and here I'm playing.
So these are major leaguers who are playing.
Yeah, they're playing.
Live there.
They do that. They still do it. They still do it today. Robbie Albon and those guys, they still go back down there and play in the wintertime. And I don't know whether it's they need to or whether they want to.
No, they don't need to.
It's not a financial thing, especially now. But back then, the guys would play. It's different then than it is now. my feeling is that it's money related now. I think money just rules all major league sports, and not only in baseball, but football, basketball, all the big time sports. It's how much can I make, not how much do I want to play. Back then, I remember Mantle in 67 was the highest paid player on our team. He made $100,000, and which was a lot of money in 67, but it's not $20 million like it is today. And so back then, guys played because they wanted to play. I mean, it was a different atmosphere. The love of the game was different than it is today. And so anyway, I went to Puerto Rico and played at Ponce and pitched a few games down there, and my shoulder really started bothering me. And so I told the Mr. Louis Arroyo, who, as you remember, was a reliever with the Yankees, he was managing. He said, well, we need to send you back home then, you know, if you use your drawing body. So I went back and had my arm examined, and I said, well, you just need to rest. And so the next year, which was
68.
I went to Syracuse again, and my arm just got, it just wouldn't get better. It just wouldn't get better. And I just couldn't get it done. And so the next year, I set out in 69, the summer of 69, I had my right shoulder operated on by Dr. Julius Navais at the Washington Medical Center in D.C. And he told me then, he says, it's a biceps tendon. He says, I don't think that you'll be able to play again. He said, but it's worth a shot. He says, you can't play now. You know, you got a 50-50 chance that it's going to work. It didn't work.
When you're with the Yankees, you only have 3 weeks, but how do the guys treat you?
Some of the guys, you know, like Peterson, those guys, Stottlemano, I hung around with in spring training. seemed to treat me square as Elston Howard. And of course he's passed away now, but he, I don't know, he was kind of like a fatherly type guy that, you know, he wasn't worried about himself. He was, you know, he'd come over and he'd say, you know, how things going, you know, anything you need, you know, can I help you out? And when I pitched when I pitched in Baltimore to him, you know, he came out and said, hey, he said, you're great. He says, you got great stuff. He says, you got a real future. I mean, he told me this after the game, you got a real future in this game. And I remember him coming in the dugout and Ralph says, well, how's it running? And he says, he's throwing the shit out of the ball. That's what he said. And he was the guy I remember of all the guys there that just, you know, was really nice. I mean, he kind of sticks out more than any of the other players. And of course, I remember riding in on the bus from the airport with Mantle. Mantle and I were sitting inside. It's really, I didn't really talk to him too much because Mickey was nice, but he had his little clique.
Yeah,
he just kind of stayed there. Well, Martin was gone then, but he still had to, he just kind of hung around. Trash and him were okay. But what happened was is that I remember him sticking, he was sitting on the bus and says, hey Perkins, come here. So I was sitting here on the inside, so I moved over and he says, well, Ashes, you're from Baltimore, right? And I said, well, not really. I said, but I live right outside of town. He says, are there any good places to eat? And I said, well,
loaded question.
I guess there are. And I said, well, you've been in Baltimore probably a lot more than I have, looking for places to eat. And he says, well, he says, not on those conditions as you go. He says, I can't go out. He says, I have to go out. And over the next couple of weeks, I realized guys like him, he was the last one to get on the bus.
He joined the crowd.
Yeah, he would come out the back door and the bus would pull around the side and he'd jump in. Because he couldn't go, everything was brought to his room. You know, he had room service because he'd go down and sit down at the bar or something, have a drink or something. He'd get swarmed. And so it really wasn't fun for him. And that kind of played on him. But I remember he asked me, and I said, I really can't help you out. So, but he said, and that's when he told me, he said, well, I was just trying to find some place where I could sneak in and get something to eat and not have to worry about getting hounded, you know. So, but most of the guys treated me swell. I mean, I didn't have any problems, you know.
What was the salary you got in the Yankees?
At that time, it was $15,000. That was the minimum wage in the big leagues at that time. That's what I got. Not anything like today.
No,
those guys make that for a couple of times a bat.
In your, well, of course, mainly with the minors, but did you have any trouble with umpires that get thrown out of the game?
No, never got thrown out of any baseball games. Never had any problems. Had a couple run-ins with Phillips. He ended up being in the big leagues for quite a while. In fact, he was Major League umpire rep, I believe. He was president of their association. But I had a couple run-ins with him. He was a pretty arrogant guy, and whenever he called balls and strikes, you know, I would want pitches that he didn't want to give me. And so sometimes, but he's the only guy that I can really remember. And remember the great big umpire, the great big guy. He was like 6'4" or 6'5", Zimbrino or. He was there in that league, and he went on to fight. He was in the big leagues for a number of years. He was great. He was real good. But the only guy I remember that ended up getting to the big leagues and was a pretty good umpire was Phillips. And he was a little guy, and he was kind of arrogant. And he just didn't, you know, you couldn't joke with him. He just steadfast on this is the way I'm in charge. And so never got, that's the only umpire I can really ever remember getting really having any kind of really run-ins with, and that really wasn't serious. It just, we just never got along with a lot.
Now, when you were pitching, were you pitching once every 4 days or
every 4 or 5 days? Yeah,
every 4 or 5 days,
yeah.
Like I said, four sometimes. Too.
Yeah, but mostly five. The Yankees kind of took care of that. That's another thing about the Yankee organization. In Boston, was the same way. There was a couple organizations that really took care of the players, and some of the other organizations, especially, I always found out that the American League teams in that era that I was playing seemed to be a little bit better towards their players. The National League teams were not quite as good. you would see them pushing the guys a little harder. American League guys paid a little bit, air conditions that we traveled under, the meal money we got seemed to be just a little bit. And whether it was because the other teams couldn't afford to do it at that time, or didn't pass the money down on the chain of command like it should have been, I don't know. It just seemed like, because I remember lots of guys saying, you know, well, it's not like this over at Cincinnati, or it's not like this over at Pittsburgh, you know. And I remember guys, I remember a couple of players coming from Boston that got traded to the Yankees in minor league deals. They came over and said, man, it's nice over at Boston. It's just like it is here. So they take good care of spring training. We got good conditions, you know, and we don't get hand-me-down uniforms with holes in them and all. We get good stuff. And that's where the Yankees were, you know. But you go to some of those minor league camps or some of the I'm not trying to be prejudiced or anything, but the National League team just seemed to think, for some reason, they just didn't seem to take care of their players like the American League teams at that time. I mean, the uniforms, the conditions, the fields that we played on, the stadiums, that were not quite as good. You know.
In between starts, what did you, of course you started every 4 or 5 days.
What I would try to do is pretty much, I guess, what most, if you talked about to other pitchers, I'd always try to throw a couple days after I threw, because like I said, I was always a starter, so I never had to worry about going in the bullpen and being ready to, you know, I would do my running always.
Nice about the running, because
that's right. Yeah, I would pitch, say I pitched on Friday, or on Sunday sometime, either during the game or before the game, rarely after, either during the game or before the game, I'd go out in the bullpen and throw for. I'd get one of the catchers and I'd say, hey, I gotta throw for about 15, 18 minutes. And I mean, I wouldn't throw hard. I would just throw enough to get the stiffness and get the blood flowing again, get some of the bad. Because whenever you pitch, you tear your arm down and you've got some bad blood in there, and just that throwing would just kind of loosen everything up and just get rid of all the junk in there and get you ready for the, you know, for the next start, which was 2 or 3 days later.
When you were at the Yankees, who was the pitching coach?
In New York, it was... Yeah, it was Turner. You're right. It was Turner. It was Turner. And Ford was helping them too. Yeah, Ford was helping them too.
Did they give you any advice? I mean, what if they did give you, what type of advice?
You know, that was another thing too. I guess I got more instruction when I was in the instructional league than I got when I was with up there. It was like at that time when the Yankees were, it was kind of chaotic because they were so used to winning, and then all of a sudden, God, what happened? You know? And it was like nobody had any answers. And the problem was is the guys were getting older, and they hadn't replenished the pool of players like they should have, and they were letting guys kind of hang on that really couldn't play at the level they once played before, so consequently the whole team suffered. And I'm not saying that Mal and those guys weren't deserving of the playing longer. I'm just saying when you put everybody together and then throw in a Ruben Amaro, a Clark, Dick Houser, that couldn't hit the way I would pay the bag, you know, they just couldn't hit. Well, you put them in the middle of the infield, and you got Pepitone, who was over first baseman, who was a total hit case, you know, and you had a guy, Charlie Smith, who they'd gotten from the Cardinals, I think, over third, and he couldn't hit third. And then you're depending on guys like Mantle and Tresh, who are getting up in age, to carry the ball for them. With two guys, you can't do that today. You got, you know, it takes more than a couple players to carry the ball club. Back then, the player pool isn't like it is today. It was harder to make it to the big leagues back then than it is today. The talent is not, I don't think the talent is as good today because you've got so many teams in the big leagues that it's spread so thin that you got 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 good, really tremendous ball players, and then the rest of them are all kind of in the same, you can throw them all out in the same, and that's why you see these guys getting $2, $3, and $4 million contracts with 4-9 records, with five.
With losing records, they get an increase.
Yeah, they get a raise. You know, back then you couldn't make the ball club. You know, and that's what I'm saying. The whole sequence of events in baseball has changed tremendously over the last 20 or 30 years because of money. And it's.
When you were with the Yankees, who was your roommate?
Hamilton, Steve Hamilton. Remember the
pitcher?
Big left. He was a professor down at Morehead State, and he just recently died about like 3 years ago. He was big 6'7". He played in the NBA with the Minneapolis Lakers still. Yeah, and he was a relief pitcher, left-handed relief pitcher.
And in New York, where did you live?
I lived over in Fort Lee. We lived with some friends, Jersey.
I was going to ask you, does the ball club make arrangements for your living?
No. At that time, well, if they did, they didn't do it for me.
You just happened to have some friends?
We had some friends that were from, my wife at that time was from Martinsburg, and one of her friends and her husband were living in Fort Lee, and they had
in New Jersey,
they had this big house. So when the Yankees called and I went there, my wife and my one son, they came and met me there, and we lived there with them, even though I was on the road and stuff for the few weeks that I was there. And instead of trying to find in a large city there a place to live, this was really, really nice, and we had that opportunity.
Okay, so after the operation, and you found out that you really didn't have it anymore.
Yeah.
What'd you do then?
Well, I was...
Were you still under... Did they pay you for anything? I mean, I was wondering.
Well, no, the operation, well, I paid for myself. The Yankees had said, well, we've done all this over the last 4 or 5 years. You know, I guess in their mind, they're thinking, this song's never going to... It's not going to work. So it's not like, I guess today, maybe, that was one thing that bothered me. You know, I thought the Yankees should have taken that responsibility on, you know. But I hadn't played in 69 at all. So in the middle of the summer, I called and said, hey, you know, I found a doctor, and he's probably the best around for this type of surgery. It was either him or Dr. McLaughlin, who was up in New York City. I think he was one of the football team's doctors. There's only a few guys who could do the operation, and so...
Was this fellow at Johns Hopkins?
No, he was at Washington Medical Center, Julius Nevisor. And so they said, well, if you want to do that, that's fine, but we, you know, you haven't played this year at all, and you didn't play hardly any last year, and it's like, we're not sure you're ever going to be able to play again. So it was like, we're sorry, but we're not sorry. Yeah. So I said, well, I can't do anything with it as it is. I'm just going to take a shot at it. You know, that's what I did. And it didn't, as I told you earlier, it didn't turn out where I could play again. So I was in school, and at that time I was probably, I just finished up my junior year, maybe. To see what happened was I could only go to school the first semester, and I started running out of classes. There was classes always offered in the second semester that I couldn't get. So, I mean, it was taking me forever to get out of school.
This is at Shepherd now.
Yeah, this is at Shepherd College. So, and I was in education. So I just said, well, can't play baseball anymore. So I went ahead and finished college. Graduated from Shepherd in 70 and went on. And at that time, I was teaching part-time at Hedgesville High School, which is just a few miles outside of Martinsburg, about 4 miles outside of town. I was teaching, helping with the baseball team at that time, and also basketball. And so the school board was letting me do that, and while I was trying to finish my degree. And then when I finished my degree, they hired me full-time. And then from 70 to 74, I coached and taught at the high school. I was head coach in basketball, baseball, and assistant coach in basketball at the high school.
Now, previously you lived in Ellicott City, Maryland.
Right.
Because you went to college in West Virginia, you moved to...
Well, my wife was from Martinsburg. She grew up in Rockville, but her parents owned a farm and all here, and they had moved up here. And when I met her, and we got married, she was going to Shepherd at the same time. She graduated from Shepherd also.
You met her?
I met her through a friend of mine, my catcher in high school, was friends with her friend, and that's how we got together. And she ended up living here in Martinsburg, and since Shepherd was close by, once I got out of Salem and signed after my sophomore year, back then you couldn't play. Once you signed, that was it. It's not like today.
Yeah, I mean, in college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You couldn't play anymore. See, today, if you sign in baseball, you can play basketball, football, whatever you want to, as long as anything but the sports you're being paid for. Well, back then it was different. I mean, if it hadn't been, I'd have gone back to Salem and continued to play basketball or done something until I had to go to spring training and also got my education. But so I ended up graduating from Shepherd, and the reason I lived here in Martinsburg was because my wife was from here. And I've been here ever since. I I moved here in 66 and been here since.
I mentioned that 70, you taught at the high school between 70 and 74.
Right.
And which year to that?
In 74, my father-in-law was running a paint business. He had a paint store and wallpaper and stuff like that. And so it was called, if you, I don't know if you remember, but it was a company called Mary Carter Paints.
Yeah.
You remember them?
Mm-hmm.
Buy one, get one free. That was their big logo. And well, and at that time, back in the early 60s and mid 60s, and up into the 70s, they were one of the biggest paint companies in the country. So anyway, my father-in-law came to me one day and said they wanted to put a distribution center in the Martinsburg area to service the mid-Atlantic area here for all the stores that they had. And since I'm their biggest volume dealer, they want me, you know, they want me to try to take it on. And he says, I'm 60-some years old. He says, I don't want that responsibility. So I've been thinking about either going into college coaching. I talked to a few people at that time, in 74, because I could see myself, I couldn't see myself being a high school teacher and a high school coach for the rest of my life. It wasn't that I thought I was too good to do that. It seemed like I could do better.
Would you be coaching? Were you thinking of coaching basketball?
I was thinking about coaching, starting out coaching baseball at the college level, and you know, and I was going to go back, and I was thinking about schools like Virginia Tech and some of the schools, the University of Virginia, and some of the schools that were fairly close by that I had a few contact, knew some people, and I was going to go there on an assistantship program where I would get my master's degree, they would pay my expenses to get my education on, and I would coach the team. Of course, I'd have to get a job to help support my family, but that's what I was thinking about doing. And when he came to me with this idea about becoming in charge of the distribution center, I said, well, I need to do something. And he said, well, you can make a lot more money doing this than you could ever make in teaching school. And at that time, I was only making $1,200 a month. And it's really, I had two kids then, and it was killing me. I was working three jobs, and I thought, well, if I'm going to work three jobs, I might as well work for myself. So I invested some money, what little bit I had at that time, and he put up the bulk of the share, and we bought a huge inventory of the supplies we needed, and we started working with about 18 other companies, like Rooster Brush and 3M and Red Devil Tools and all different companies, and we started repping for them, and I built a warehouse, eventually built a warehouse here in Martinsburg, and we distributed it out of there from 74 to 1987. And that's when I got out of it, 87, 88. And then I went into business for myself, which was a kind of a spinoff from the paint business. But that's how I got to that point. And so today I run a company that takes care of, like, we're in four states, and we do parking lot maintenance, asphalt maintenance. We do striping.
You do. Years ago, I had a company with parking lot striping.
Yeah. Yeah, we do parking lot striping, we do airport runways, we do tennis courts, we do a lot of playgrounds for the school systems.
So you do some traveling then?
Yeah. We don't do much. Occasionally we'll stay overnight, but most of the time it's in and out and back. You know, we try to stay within about 100, 150 mile radius of here. And we do probably 90% of the work in Eastern West Virginia, our company does. And we're pretty fortunate that we've hooked up with some large companies and, you know, some of the major chains like Burger King and McDonald's and Shoney's and some of these companies.
Yeah.
We do multiple Taco Bell. We take care of lots of their restaurants. When I mean lots, I mean like 25 or 30 of each one of those franchises we take care of. And then we end up doing about 400 to 450 jobs a year. So we're pretty busy.
That's good.
Yeah, pretty busy.
Okay, do you keep in touch with any of the small players?
Nope. The only one I see occasionally is Ray Barker, and he happens to live here in Martinsburg. And my buddy has played on part of a season in Syracuse. When I was going back and forth to the big leagues, Buddy had been sent over from, I'm not sure what organization, but he ended up being sent over. He was in a AAA, and he was swapped over to the Yankees AAA, and just ironically, we were both in the same town, and we played that one summer, and then the next year, he got traded again, and I'm not sure where he went, but I never, that was it. But he's the only person I ever see, big league-wise, because there's nobody else around this area, you know. Everybody else is kind of out of the room. I did see Brooks Robinson. He was a speaker at Apple Harps Parade last year, and I talked to him for a few minutes up here at the Holiday Inn before the banquet, and he remembers me because I remember pitching against him in Baltimore, that relief job there, and I remember him telling Mantle, because Mantle was playing first base at that time because his legs were going and he couldn't play the outfield anymore, and so Brooks said, when he came, he was a lazy bot, all right, good, he came back to Mantle, and he said, he said, they got to quit bringing these guys up to throw the hell out of the boys, because I can't see any very good anymore anyway.